Living a life that depicts the teachings of Islam is the dream of every Muslim. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, is in collaboration with Muslim Public Affairs Center, NPAC. Everyday Muslim will address the misconceptions on Islam, foster a peaceful coexistence, and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, simplified understanding of the deen.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته listeners at home or wherever you are. I am Abdul Hakim Qasim and I welcome you to another edition of Everyday Muslim Show on Women Radio 91.7 FM. Today is Saturday 27th of September 2025, corresponding to the 5th of Rabi'ul Thani, 1447 AH. It's the first Saturday of the 4th month of the Hijra year, 1447 AH, the month of Rabi'ul Thani. Thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the gift of life and the gift of good health. Alright, Islam is certainly the way of life. With that, Nasheed, welcome you to this very program, Everyday Muslim. On Everyday Muslim Show, we try to address misconceptions about Islam, foster peaceful coexistence within the society, and guide the Everyday Muslim on their journey in Islam. This program is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the exalted, the almighty, says, "Aku anfusakum wa ahlikum nara." Save your soul and the soul of the members of your household from the hellfire. Today, inshallah, we want to look at a very important topic. But before then, I want you to know that this program is streaming live on Instagram via MPAC Everyday Muslim page. The handle is EverydayMuslim01. You can log in on Instagram to view the studio and also send in your comments on the live feeds on Instagram. Simultaneously, the program is also streaming on YouTube via the Women radio page. Search Women Radio on YouTube, click on the page and join to view the studio live. Later on the program, we would open our phone lines for you to call in and share your thoughts. Alhamdulillah, in today's episode of Everyday Muslim Show, we turn our attention to the most pressing responsibilities of our time, and that is raising the next generation. Raising the next generation. We live in a world where moral confusion is widespread, values are blurred, temptations are glorified, and the line between right and wrong is often questioned. For parents and communities, the task of nurturing children who remain strong in their faith, confident in their identity, and resilient in the face of societal pressure has never been more urgent. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam reminded us that every child is born upon the fitra, and that is the pure natural state, you know, just like what psychologists call the tabula rasa. All right, and it is the parents and the environment that shape them. Talk about the nature nurture controversy. Actually, this places a great trust upon us, that is, to guide, to protect, and to equip our children not only with the knowledge of Islam, but also with the strength to live by it in a world that often pulls them away. So, how can we raise resilient, Muslim children, or children generally, in a morally confused world? What strategies, examples, and prophetic wisdom can help us carry out these trusts? This amana effectively. To help us reflect on this crucial topic, we are honored to be joined by Hajira Shakiro Omobolanle Ajijola. Salamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh, Hajira. You need to unmute your microphone to speak. Salamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I think we're having a challenge with the audio. Can you hear me from your end?
Yes, I can. Right. I can hear you.
Okay, it's
I
here in the studio. We cannot seem to hear you. We would resolve that, actually. For those who are actually meeting Hajia Shakira Jijola for the first time, let me just give us an abridged, information about who she is. Hajia Omobolanle Shakira Jijola is a certified trauma counselor trained in adverse childhood experiences and early trauma, and holds a certificate in child protection. She runs Bina Al Amal Foundation, a non-governmental and not-for-profit organization which provides social and economic empowerment to survivors and victims of gender-based violence and disadvantaged communities across Nigeria. She's also the lead counselor of Reignite Therapy and Counseling, a therapy practice that offers psychosocial services to individuals who have experienced one or all forms of trauma. She holds an executive member position at the African Network of Professional Counselors, ANEPCO, and is a graduate of ADI School of Psychotherapy and Counseling. She is also an NLP practitioner, a passionate gender-based violence advocate, as well as being a trained certified emotional intelligence specialist and a global change agent. Omobolanle brings a warm and collaborative approach to her work. She believes that therapeutic change is best facilitated when an individual has a sense of safety and understanding, and she utilizes research-based, trauma-informed, and culturally sensitive practices to effectively support her clients' mental health and wellness. She is passionate about spreading awareness against sexual and all forms of gender-based violence, concerned about the total well-being of families, and by extension, children, and creating impact in terms of lasting solutions to improve the lives of the less privileged. She has gone on numerous campaigns to schools and communities, and has participated in road rallies to raise awareness on child sexual abuse and the rights of the African child, sexual and gender-based violence, and gender inequality. She is a firm believer in securing a safe and well-balanced environment free from all forms of violence. So she is actually a well-rounded personality as far as what we want to discuss today is concerned. So again, let me test the microphone to see if at all we can actually hear you now. Hajia, again, salam alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Feel no sound. This is awesome.
All right. Please, can you repeat that again? Sorry.
Okay. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right. It's still, we're still having challenges with the audio, actually. All right. So, how will we resolve that? Basically, like we said earlier, we'll take a look at raising resilient children in a morally confused world. We know quite well that the world we live today is filled with different distractions, different challenges. with a whole lot of issues that affects the morality of the children, especially because we live in a society where the quest for economic survival has taken a lot of parents away from the home, away from the primary responsibility of nurturing their children. So a lot of these children have actually been left alone for the society to nurture for them. In fact, some children are actually being raised by the television, by the social media, such that it becomes a challenge for people, for these children, to really understand what is right from what is wrong. Because a lot of the information and a lot of things that they accept to be the right thing or the wrong thing are the things they're able to see on social media, they're able to probably hear from their peers, or, you know, the trends in the society. So a lot of them really don't have that compass upon which they can gauge what is right from what is wrong. All right. So, let's hear you again, Hajia. I'm sorry. We are still trying to.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Okay, so to start with, because we're looking at raising resilient children, my first question to you is this, because when we talk about living in a morally confused world, what exactly does that look like in real life today? Could you paint a picture of the unique challenges Muslim children face now that earlier generations did not face? And in the light of that, what would you say resilience is not just useful but essential for them?
Okay. So, one word. Can you hear me? Salaamu alaikum. Okay. All right. Okay. So, one word before I even delve into it is just information overload. Because, you know, when we were growing up, there was limited time to spend on the television. You knew that, you know, if you were not in front of the TV between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m., that was it. That was your own TV time as a child, unless you were interested in, you know, listening to news and watching or catching up on information about Nigeria. But now, in the world that we live in, just like I said, there's information overload. Children have access to the internet. There are so many search engines where they can go online to get so much information. For the young ones, there are social media handles. I was recently at a family, you know, like a family life program, and, you know, we're engaging with the younger ones and asking them about social media handles. And I heard about some that even I don't even know exist. And it's from these different forums that these children are getting so many things. And to a large extent, they are just, you know, like confused. It begins to now blur the lines between what is right, what is wrong, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. A lot of children are struggling to find that balance or even understand. And even we, the parents, which is what I always like to say, is we can't give what we don't have. Even most parents are still struggling with, you know, the way the world is now, with the amount of information that is out there. And if we're not able to, you know, as parents, as caregivers, to be able to streamline that information for our children, invariably a lot of people, because they struggle with that balance, you know what, because I don't know it, let me tell my child, you know, go and Google it or just check it up online. But while you're doing that, are you also following up with that child to offer that guidance as they are checking those various and multiple streams of information so that you can, you know, streamline it for them? So that's why, to a large extent, children are like, you know, let me just say, they're like fish out of water right now, a lot of them, because they don't even understand what is going on, but they just know that they have a lot of information, but they can't streamline it into a straight line without our guidance.
Now, if I pity them. I pity them with this kind of picture that you have painted. Mm-hmm. Seriously, because I remember that, you know, the days of all this black and white TV that we actually, you know, grew up with. Then it has to be 4 o'clock. If it's not 4 o'clock, the TV stations are not air open. But these days, the TV stations are available 24/7. In fact, even if you woke up in the night, you have programs to watch. They live in a world of cable TV. Mm-hmm. So it's that they are watching TV, you know, cable TV, or they are on their gadgets, different gadgets, phones, tabs, and the likes, like laptops, internet, you know, everything, social media. Now, the first of Allah said that every child is born upon the fitra, that natural divine state that God has actually designed for man. So what does that really mean in practical terms for parents and caregivers, and how can they preserve that natural purity while also preparing children for the realities of negative influences they'll inevitably face, because that's the world they live in now? Are there specific lessons that probably we can bring out from the life of Prophet Sallam on how to nurture young people that parents today can actually adapt and adopt?
Okay, so you know, just like you've rightly said, and that's part of the teachings that, you know, we always infuse when we're talking to people about, you know, both coming from that angle of emotional intelligence and NLP, that everyone is born a clean slate. We learn things like love, hate, racial bias, gender bias, what do they call it? All the biases that we learn, whether it's race, gender, religion, racism, all these things are learned. They are not things that we come with when we are born. And as parents, as caregivers, it is now, you know, a task upon us. Just like you said, that every child is born upon the future. They have clean slates. So it's whatever we put in from whatever knowledge we have that they would now embody. And then as they are growing older and they are getting more information, they are adding it onto what we have taught them. And they are, you know, like building on it. And just like the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has, you know, like said that, because these children come to us clear, they come to us clean. It is our duty. And, well, one of the ways I think he, you know, was able to do that was he was able to show people, you know, like compassion, demonstrate compassion and kindness. Those are part of the things. Because if you cannot be able to teach your children certain key values that are largely missing from my own point of view in this present day and age, we have children struggling with empathy for others, children struggling with being able to, you know, like show compassion to others, children, you know, not being able to understand that thin line between right and wrong. If we're able to, like, you know, show them that, they now begin to understand that, okay, this is right, this is wrong, this doesn't look okay, maybe I need to run this by my parents. And a more important one, like I've been saying earlier on, is also being able to offer guidance and wisdom to help these children make informed decisions. Because like I said, there's information overload out there. However, these children can only streamline and pick what is right, what would help them, what would continue to guide and strengthen their faith and their resilience, is us being able to guide them to make informed decisions. Because if we're able to do this, like I said, if we're able to do this, it helps them a great deal. Because what we'll essentially be doing is we'll be nurturing positive values for these children. Teach our children good values. Teach them good morals. Teach character traits. What we emulate, they would also pick up and do. And then we must also, which is extremely, extremely important for any child, it's one thing to say you are guiding the child, you are offering assistance. Are you offering that guidance and assistance in a safe, supportive environment? A child cannot learn in a conflict-filled environment. A child cannot learn in an unsafe environment. A child cannot thrive in an unsafe environment. And that's why you now have where you say, oh, the internet raised my child. If your house is not a safe place for that child, and that child only feels safe online, in a gathering of people that are giving him or her different kinds of advice, of course, that child will naturally turn there. So that, I would say, is, you know, my last point. Let's, you know, to round all of this up, make sure that we are doing all of this in a safe and protective environment for our children.
Very much. But sincerely, as you're saying that, and I feel like a lot of parents, you know, husband, wife, father, mothers, they have issues with themselves, and these things affect the children one way or the other. So it's not just about what you're telling them, it's also about what they are seeing you do and the kind of environment in which they grow up. So in that regard, now usually still talking about parents, many of them perhaps unintentionally actually put more energy into academics and worldly success. I want you to be this, be a medical doctor, be a lawyer. You monitor their academics as they go to school. What time should they go to school? What time should they come back home, get extra lesson teachers, do this and all that. Now, however, the spiritual and moral ground usually takes a back seat. Nobody cares about, you know, your attitude, your behavior, your morality, whether it's right or wrong, your spirituality, your relationship with God. So how can families actually strike a balance, you know, a healthy balance, I mean, especially between raising children who are competent in today's world and those who are actually deeply rooted in their faith? So that at the end of the day, one is not left to suffer for the other.
Okay, thank you. So you know, you've already pretty much like given the answer even before I say it, because that's the thing, finding that balance between the two. Because I always tell people, yes, it's good to have a child that is academically sound, that is, you know, winning awards and is, you know, just sails through academics seamlessly. However, a certificate would not make connections for that child. A certificate will not help them build the networks that would help them grow and thrive in whatever career or field they find themselves in. A certificate would not help them with that personal connection that they need to Allah. Because let's face it, all these gifts that those children have, their academic excellence, they are sailing through academics easily, they are winning awards, they are being able to understand whatever their teachers are teaching them, are all gifts that Allah gave to them when they came to us. So if we are not able to help them find that balance, and we keep encouraging the child that, oh, don't worry, and just just focus on your academics, and when you are older, you'll be able to face God. No, we start from when they are still young. Tie their gifts, because I would use a practical example I use for my children. I tie in their gifts, their academic gifts to, you know, I tie it to Allah, and I always tell them, when they win awards, I tell them, you must always be able to thank Allah for this award. It did not come from your own. Yes, it came from your efforts as well. However, Allah gave you that gift. If he did not bless you with it, would you have been able to win the award? If he did not bless you with a sound mind, would you be able to, you know, like, quickly walk through problems when your teacher gives it to you and all that? So basically what I'm saying is, let's just prioritize spiritual growth. Find a way to tie it into their academic performances such that these children know that These skills or these strengths or these abilities that I have are not just, you know, things that because, oh, my teacher taught me or my mom taught me or because I have various lesson teachers. It is because it is a gift
from Allah,
that a being that created me gave to me. And the only way I can continue to build or expand on those gifts is for me to continuously be thankful to that being, which is Allah, that gave me those gifts. So when we're able to tie those two together, I think it helps us with that balance. It helps us with that balance. Because recently, my youngest now has just started secondary school, and he was asking me about Sajda Shukru, because I take things one step at a time based on how we can understand it. And I told him, I said, where did you hear that from? He said, oh, he was just checking online, and he was, you know, looking up on how to thank Allah when something really good happens to you. And he saw Sajda Shukru. So we sat down, we talked about it, and he was like, oh, wouldn't people think I am weird in school if I just, you know, if I win something and or someone praises me for something and they just see me go to a corner and, you know, and I'm putting my head on the
ground.
And I said, we live in a world where people understand religious, religious activities. That's yes. So just explain to people later on that, okay, this is why I did this. And we had that talk. He's 11. And so that, for me, that's a big deal. For him to be able to check something online, come and ask me, and then we're able to streamline it and tie it into him being grateful. So I think for me, it's just, you know, tying that gratitude and letting our children know that this thing came from somewhere. Be thankful for it. So it naturally piques their curiosity that if I have to be thankful to Allah, what other things do I have to do for Allah? What other things or ways can I get more benefit from Allah? More blessings from him. And that just helps them, you know, begin to build that religious curiosity and helps them to become more grounded and interested in their religion rather than just focusing only on academics.
I love that example that you gave. Now probably just tell me about your son that for those like you who actually watch football, when they see Mohamed Salah of Liverpool, when he scores a goal and his actually goes on the ground to, you know, put his forehead, that is Sajad Shukr. Because at the end of the day, see, if I found out that a lot of people, a lot of Britons and children started following Mohamed Salah's example, that whenever this guy is, you know, scores a goal, the next thing he does is he goes to the ground and puts his head on the ground as a show of gratitude. So now that is Sajad Shukr. One way or the other, that he scores a goal, that's a physical thing and that's, you know, a worldly affair. But then he believes that I'm not the only striker that you have. There are many strikers that will make such attempts and it will not, you know, the goal will not be scored. That I'm able to do that, probably God is just being merciful. So, and for, you know, children too, that there are many of us in class, many of us were taught by the same teacher, we read the same book, read the same material, some of us were even taught by the same extra lesson teacher, but at the end of the day, someone, you know, gets, you know, the first position, one of us probably come behind. So do you think you're just better, or is just Allah that is being merciful? And I love that way, the way you're able to tie such, you know, achievements with the fact that Allah is actually the one that is behind it. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala continue to bless them. Now, talking about our children now, and we know quite well that a lot of them actually face challenges, you know, bullying, peer pressure, you know, hostile environment and the likes like that. Now, so resilience is something that is very, very important in, you know, through this. So resilience often grows through adversity. Now, so how can Muslim parents prepare their children to remain firm in their faith when they face some of these challenges that I've just talked about, peer pressure, bullying, or, you know, hostile environments that are actually hostile to Islamic values? And what difference does an early grounding, early, you know, nurturing in Quran and Sunnah make in building such, you know, resilient spirit, such strength in these kids?
All right. So again, like I said, the focus is still mainly from us, the parents and caregivers, because we are the ones that will help them build these skills, because they don't come with these skills.
Absolutely.
They don't. So one of the ways, like I said, is first, let's even start from us as parents finding out, are we even resilient ourselves? How much of adversity have we faced? How did we face it? Did we face it in positive ways or negative ways, so that we are careful what we are teaching our children? I remember there was a time I went to a PTA meeting, and you know, most of the conversation at some point got to bullying. And I remember a parent standing up and saying, you know, all these things that we are doing is just discussions, that she has had enough of, you know, people always talking and no action being done, that she has told her child that should anybody stab you with a pencil, that person back, so we deal with it later on. Now, while that might have sounded like a, you know, a practical solution to her, that's her dealing with that situation out of frustration. Recently, I was still at another meeting, and the exact same thing happened. This is a parent that stood up to talk about bullying and said her child has been constantly bullied for a complete term, and she had kept speaking up and nothing was being done. And she just decided to, you know, like, speak about it for the last time. And the woman burst into tears. She said she's at her wit's end, that she was thinking of taking her child out of school, but then she spoke with someone and they told her, you know what, just build this child's resilience to a point. And that was what she was able to do. So that's my first point. Let's teach these children coping mechanisms. Help them develop coping mechanisms such that, you know, when these issues come, let them not look at it as, oh, should I react out of frustration? Should I react out of anger? Should I pay back evil for evil? Rather, let this child think of the challenge or that bullying or that, you know, like that negative attention as a problem. And then let them now start looking at ways to problem solve that issue. And then let them also be able to find ways to seek support. Because one of the things that her speaking out at that meeting did was a lot of parents now came up, you know, they started asking her, what's your child's name? What class is your child in? You know, I'm going to talk to my child to, you know, like, keep an eye on her. Both parents that had children in senior and junior classes. So at the end of that meeting, the mother walked away with a large arsenal of parents that were ready to support not only her, but her child. So we need to be able to teach our children that they must see adversity not as a stumbling block, but as a learning point.
All right.
Because that's one of the things that Allah has already said would happen to each and every one of us as believers.
All right.
He will test us. There's no way we can avoid
him. Absolutely.
He will test us in various ways. So when you're able to teach your child from the get-go that Allah will test you, and it's not that he will come down himself or he will send angels. He will send different people to you. Different people to you in different capacities to test you. It now depends on how you take on that test. Are you going to forget that you have a strong backing from Allah that has promised to, you know, continue guiding you every step of the way and show mercy and compassion to you? And then you say, okay, let me draw from that strength and not, you know, react to this person the way they are reacting to me right now. When that child begins to understand that there are certain things that you should be able to, you know, no matter how difficult it is, just walk away from, then that child begins to be able to face certain things and just, you know, look away. Look away. My eldest is a lot like me. He is the type that once he sees people getting cheated, his blood starts boiling. He automatically wants to, you know, fight for everybody. And no, this, so we are constantly always having that conversation that, see, Abdul Fatai, I understand that you want to, you feel very passionate about advocating for people. However, also remember that you are a Muslim and Islam preaches peace. You need to find that balance. So if you are even going to pick a battle, pick that battle wisely. If you are even going to confront an adversity, confront it wisely. Pass across your pain. Pass across your points, not your pain that you are feeling at that point in time. Because if you are talking from that pain that, hey, you did this, and that's why I'm going to do this, and do this, everything just gets scattered. So when we want to prepare our children for adversity, I like to say that teaching them those coping mechanisms in a positive way, and how for them to deploy those coping mechanisms such that it doesn't affect them. Because I also like to tell children that, see, that there are some battles that even though you know that you can win it, you walk away, not because you are not wise or you are not strong enough or you don't know what to see. You walk away because the values and the principles that you have tells you that this is not a battle that is worth fighting. It's not a battle that is worth fighting. And that's where we as parents now help them with that support afterwards. When they come to us that, oh, mommy, oh, daddy, oh, this happened, and I didn't fight back, but this was what I did. And you encourage the child and you teach them more. And then most importantly, let's foster a strong self of and sense of identity for our children. The world, just like I said, because of this information overload, people are trying to fit into an ideal that doesn't exist. You have to look a certain way. You have to dress a certain way. You have to talk a certain way. You have to know certain things. It is not a must for your child to fit in. Each of my three children are different personalities. And for each of their different personalities, I tell them, do not fit into any crowd. Stand out in your own way. So long as, one, you are not hurting anyone. Two, you are not going against the guidelines and the rules and regulations and every single thing that the Quran has told you to do. Three, so long as what you are doing or you're standing out is not haram and it is not you showing off, then you are good to go.
All right.
Because when we begin to, mold our children to fit in, it begins to whittle away at their sense of identity. Then the child doesn't even know what they want to do. And that's where peer pressure comes in, and it begins to whittle away our children's resilience. And that's why we have this issue of peer pressure. When the child does not know who they are, they can't even say yes or no. They don't want to fight with anybody. They can't stand up for themselves. Of course, other people will take advantage of that. So it's a big charge on us as parents.
All right.
And we have, Allah has made it beautiful that we have the Quran and the Sunnah to guide us.
Inshallah.
So we already have a template.
Okay. All right. I like that. As much as we would like to go, and we'll be going on a short break. But before we go on that break, I want you to quickly, in a very short time, provide this particular answer, because I have this, probe. Because we live in a digital age, and we know quite well that social media is doing a lot in trying to actually shaping the lives of our children. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X, Snapchat, and so many of these, platforms or apps that we have now. In fact, some of them have actually even become the classroom, and that's why you see some trends, and everybody wants to actually implement what they saw, that this is what is trending, this has gone viral, and they also want to recreate such things that they have seen. Now, so what practical steps can parents take to guide their children's online engagement without cutting off them from the world? So that it's not as if they are not even aware of what is going on around them, but at the same time, you actually want them in a way that they are aware of what is going on, but that is not what would eventually shape them. They, like you talk about, maintaining their identity. So how can they feel confident and proud of their Muslim identity despite these pressures that they're actually seeing online? So they see them, they are aware of them, but their identity is not taken away, such that because of what they see, they now come up with new forms of identity. They are still able to maintain their identity as Muslims, but at the same time, they are aware of what is going on. But what is going on social media should not be the one that will shape them. So how can they really achieve this?
All right, thank you. So the first step would be for us to encourage our children to pick positive role models. Alhamdulillah, now we have a lot of young Islamic influencers online that talk about Islamic values. They talk about, they teach them. I think there's one particular one that I know. I follow about two or three. I follow their pages. They talk about them. So they're teaching children duas they can use. They're teaching them hadiths and all that. So when you're able to encourage your children to pick positive role models, it helps them a great deal. And then one of the other ways you can guide their online presence is to also, set boundaries. Set boundaries to how, when, and where they use their online activities. Monitor them. There are various apps that you can monitor. My eldest is 17. He has gone off to university. However, I have access to every single social media handle. He has. I have the passwords. So invariably, I'm seeing everything he's seeing. But before we were able to get to that point, we had a conversation. Online safety, talking about, we talked about, what did they call these people that heckle those online? We talked about, the name just jumped out of my head. These people that harass young people online when they're internet trolls. We talked about internet trolls. Okay. We talked about dispensing information. We talked about dispensing information, sharing pictures. Them being careful about giving people sensitive information
about themselves,
such that people can have access to their accounts. Talked about him being careful with giving out his phone when his phone has his social media accounts online, being careful with his passwords. We had all those conversations before he was given a phone. Another thing is this age thing now, that when is the appropriate age to give a child a phone? And then that's where we now have that conversation of necessity over need. If you're in an area where, that there's no other way around it, I have to give my child a phone, you must also have that conversation with your child and with someone trusted that can monitor that child when you are not there, so that the child is not just checking anything and everything online. So I would say it's those two things. It's even four. Yes. Set boundaries. Make sure you have that conversation with the child. Monitor their online activity. If you are not there physically, have someone that can do it for you. Encourage your children to pick role models that embody Islamic values, true Islamic values. And then also foster a sense of community. That's you engage your child to connect with other Muslims. Make sure you are constantly reminding them that there's an active Muslim community in every single environment that they are. All they have to do is just ask, and they would introduce them to them. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're still listening to Everyday Muslim. Go on a short break. When we return, the program continues. Please stay with us.
Sleepless, I know we weren't easy, and you are the reason I'm here. And no other feeling can top what you mean to me. I owe you all of my years. I love you the most. I just want you to know. You gave me the love I always need. My heart will always be your home. I'll be there forever and ever, wrapped up in endless.
just love. X marks the spot, you're my treasure.
Can't thank the Lord enough.
You are my angel, my superhero. Forever I'm grateful. Always a part of me.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete.
All right, you're still listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. It is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. And we are discussing raising resilient Muslim children in a morally confused world. And our guest speaker is Hajia Shakira Jijola, who is a certified trauma counselor training adverse childhood experiences and early trauma and holds a certificate in child protection. She runs Bin Al Amal Foundation, a non-governmental and not-for-profit organization which provides social and economic empowerment to survivors and victims of gender-based violence and disadvantaged communities across Nigeria. She's also the lead counselor of Reignite Therapy and Counseling, a therapy practice that offers psychosocial services to individuals who have experienced one or all forms of trauma. Can be a part of this discourse by calling the number 07000-917-917, 07000-917-917. Alternatively, you can call 09155-917-917, 09155-917-917. Outro field line for the female callers is 0800-235-917. You can also send a message via SMS or WhatsApp to the number 08155-917-917. That is 08155-917-917. This program is streaming live on Instagram via MPAC Everyday Muslim page. The handle is Everyday Muslim 01. You can also log in on Instagram to view the studio and also send your comments on the live feeds on Instagram. At the same time, the program is also streaming on YouTube via the Women Radio page. All right, so we'll be expecting your calls and your messages, especially on WhatsApp. All right, so like I said, our guest is Hajia Jijola Shakira. So Hajia, I hope you're still there. Hello, Aja. You have muted yourself. You need to unmute yourself. All right. While we wait for Aja to join us again, begins with it talking about raising resilient children, I would like to just remind you of some things that she has said. First is that as a parent, we really need to understand that the kind of society that we are in today, these children are born into a world that is filled with information overload. So you do need to actually pity them. So many things they are contending with because there are just too many, the volumes of information that they are trying to navigate their way around. So they're getting a whole lot of information. They see it on the street, see it on social media, they see it on the TV, on the Heritage on radio, on the internet, via social media, and so many other areas like that. So navigating all these pieces of information could be quite Herculean for this kid. So it is our responsibility as parents to guide them, through this particular situation. So we need to provide them with the necessary guidance. They need to be aware of what is going on and how they can cope with all of this. And in building their resilience, they need to understand their faith, they need to be grounded, and they also need to know how to cope with some of these challenges. Hadi, are you back there? You are muted, please. You need to unmute yourself. Hadi Ajijala, are you still there? Alright. She's still with us, but her phone is muted. So we cannot get across. Well, hello, Hadi, are you still there? Alright, so as we await her, you know, return. Well, she also told us that for us, we need to not just pay attention to their academics, also need to pay attention to their spiritual and moral, foundations. Because one of the ways by which she gave was that we need to actually tie, you know, their academic achievement with their creator, for them to understand that it's actually a privilege and an opportunity, a mercy from their creator that they're able to achieve some of those academic feats, like probably winning awards, completing a particular program or a training, scoring high grades and things like that, winning competitions. Yeah, it's good. And they have prepared, you will allow them to prepare. Even as much as they're able to do that, you also need to reiterate the fact that they are not probably the only ones that competed in such, that made such attempts. But for them to probably, come through as winners, as champions, is something that need to realize that it is a mercy from their creator. And for that reason, they need to be grateful. They need to show gratitude in different ways. And in showing gratitude, that would allow them to understand, that would make them humble. And at the same time, maintain a kind of balance in the way they even probably even celebrate some of these achievements. Then beyond that, it's also the fact that she talked about the fact that, yeah, there would be challenges with peer pressure and other things like that. But when they have a strong, Islamic identity, regardless of the pressures that they face, such identity would make them understand that, yes, these challenges will come. It will even prepare their minds for such challenges, and it will assist them to be able to navigate it. So for them, they should not, social media should not be the standards of their judgment, their identity as Muslims. And at the same time, they should also pick their battles very wisely. Even as much as they are trying to advocate the rights of others, they also need to pick their battles wisely, especially looking at the end goal. Will this make them safer? Will it allow them to pass home the point? Or if it's something that eventually will probably be something they will regret, or that will make people misjudge their intentions, or misunderstand what they're trying to achieve, then it's better they actually withdraw a bit. That peace is what matters, and they need to maintain such peace with everyone around them. All right, so Hadi, are you still there, please? Like I said, this topic we've been discussing with Hadi Shakir Ajijola, who is a certified trauma counselor training adverse childhood experiences and early trauma.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. All right, so we've been trying to connect with you earlier. It seems you are muted.
You can hear me, I guess.
Yes, we can hear you.
Network just...
Oh, sorry.
Just threw me out.
Oh, it's one of the challenges of this virtual interaction. Actually, sometimes. Yes, I can. I can hear you. I can hear you loud and clear. All right, I can hear you loud and clear. All right. So now, very quickly, The home is usually called the first home. I don't know if you can hear me. I'm trying to ask a question. That, you know, the home is called the first, you know, school that a child comes, you know, in contact with, you know, like a madrasa or whatsoever. So how much impact, you know, does a parent's character, habits, and daily choices really have on raising resilient children? And what can parents do to ensure that they are living the very values they want to instill in their kids? I don't know if at all you were able to grab that question.
I can't hear you, but you can hear me, obviously.
Yes, yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
I can hear you.
Oh, so how then do we sort that? She cannot hear me, actually. I don't know.
I think it's feedback.
Oh, sorry. Well, it's the I think it's also the network that, like, it seems probably you are a bit delayed, or that is, you know, really in the message. So, but what I'm trying to ask is the fact that I don't know if you can hear me right now. Can you hear now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
I can hear you now.
All right. So, I'm saying that we call the home the first school that a child comes in contact with. So, how much does impact does a parent's own character, habits, and daily choices truly have on raising resilient children? And what can parents do to ensure that they are living the very values they want to instill in their kids? And probably I want you to give very short answers because we are running out of time, actually.
Okay, so short form answer is you can't give what you don't have. I think
absolutely.
I mentioned that one earlier in our talk.
Conversation, yeah.
As parents, like I said, it is what we have. It is what we have. It is what we can give that our children would see. If I'm using a practical example, you are telling your child, and this is a problem all of us as parents have. Don't shout, don't shout. Use your inside voice. And yet our children constantly see us shouting. And we want these children to be quiet, yet we raise our voice as parents. While it is not easy for us, it is something that we must have constant conversations with these children. It's good for us to say, as a child, when you get to school, you must be a good child. You must model good behavior. Are we, as parents, constantly modeling good behavior for these children? You tell your child, don't lie. Your child is seeing and hearing you saying little white lies.
Hmm.
You tell your child, it is a sin to waste food. Your child is seeing you pour food away.
Hmm.
But one of the ways that I think we can, you know, like, find that balance is, for someone like me, if there are times when my children will see me pouring food away, mommy, you say it's a sin for us as Muslims to waste food. They are pouring it away. Okay, I explain. The food has been left out for too long, or we are never sure if ants have crawled on it, or maybe cockroach or something. That's why I'm throwing it away. If we are able to explain why sometimes our children see us deviate from what they know to be right, and you are explaining the why, because let's face it, the large portion of Nigerian parents now, they do not feel the need to explain to their children.
They feel that they're accountable to them, yes.
You could not ask your parents.
Why should I be explaining what I'm doing?
Why? Exactly. That why was never in our vocabulary when we're speaking.
Hanya, we have a caller on the line, please. Let's pick this call. Hello?
Oh, okay.
All right. Hello? Oh, okay. The call is gone. Okay, you can continue, please.
Okay. So if we're able to, you know, like, have that conversation and address their why. Why, mommy, you said we should not lie, but I just saw you tell somebody now that you are on the road, but you're inside the house. If you're able to explain and find that balance, encourage them, find out why, they would not, you know, start saying, oh, if mommy is doing this, let me too
do it.
Be able to bend the rules when it suits me. No, don't bend the rules when it suits you. Know that you are bending it because you are either trying to save somebody from something, or you are trying to save yourself from a situation, so that child does not begin to think that being corny is the way. So as parents, like I said, we have to model good behavior for these children. demonstrate good character traits such as honesty, kindness, responsibility, and also practice what we preach.
Absolutely.
And that's where, like I said, addressing that why comes in.
And I hope the why that we are explaining to will be the right thing. So it's not like we're like trying to justify what we have done. All right.
Now, all
right. So now, on this note, actually, because we know that raising resilient children is goes beyond just what one singular family can do. Now we talk about communal efforts now. So in your view, how can places of worship, schools, and youth groups play a stronger role in raising resilient children as a community? And then, what kind of structures, programs, or initiatives can you see that really would make the necessary difference?
Okay, so I would say in that respect, our younger generation have, they've streamlined this and they've deployed it effectively. In that there are so many Muslim communities, both online and offline, that children of all ages can get, into mixers, meet and greets for young children. So for me, I think that's one of the ways that, the community has started helping children to, find that their own people, if we can call it that. So just one of the things I think they would continue to build on is just, continuing to strengthen that, creating supportive environment so that it encourages spiritual growth and development for our children. And just like I said, a lot of them have been, doing programs. Like, I know that there's one that does programs during the holiday period for children. There's summer camps for Muslim children where they are teaching them about their faith, building resilience. But for parents as well, I always say, is what you seek is what you would find.
Mm.
If you say you don't know where these organizations are, just like our children are going online to search for so many things, it's as simple as going to the Google search bar. Muslim communities for my child age, so and so, in my area, a million and one of them will pop up.
All right.
And you go through, you check which one aligns with your values, aligns with your principles. You check them out before taking your child there. You do your due diligence, and then you introduce your child to those communities. Like my son now, like I said, I just went to uni. That was the first thing that I told him. When you get to school, I think we got to his hostel and it was the talk shop. The person that runs the talk shop, said settling to me, and I was I was relieved.
All right.
I told him,
because of time, actually.
When you are done settling in, go back and meet him, ask him about the Muslim community, let him introduce you to
Haja, on a final note, so because of time, we are pressed for time. On a final note, if you actually had to leave parents with one timeless prophetic principles for raising children in today's morally confused world, what would it be and why would such matter now? In 30 seconds, please.
Okay, so one timeless thing I would leave them with is, like I keep saying, you can't give what you don't have. Build the values, the principles, the resilience, the skills and the strategies that you wish you had when you were growing up that you didn't.
Okay.
That would have helped you today to navigate certain situations or, scenarios that you did not have any guidance with.
All right.
Narrow down on those learnings, build on them, and then pass them on effectively to your children.
All right.
Effectively being the key word.
All right.
And make sure that at any point in time, wherever your child is, they are in a safe and protected environment.
All right. Jazakumullah khairan. Thank you very much, Haja Shakira Chichola, for the insight that you have shared. I would like to appreciate you for all that, and to all our listeners and to those who try to call in, we appreciate everyone. You can listen again to this episode or other previous episodes of Everyday Muslim on mpac-ng.org. mpac-ng.org. Scroll down and click on the MPAC project to view Everyday Muslim past uploaded episode. Follow Everyday Muslim on social media, Facebook Everyday Muslim, and on Instagram Everyday Muslim 01. Inshallah, Everyday Muslim will make it way back to your areas next week, same time, 11 a.m. same station, WFM 91.7. I remain Abdul Hakim Qasim. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa barakatuh.
It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a beautiful way. Do you know what I returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a beautiful way.